I know it's obvious humor is important to you, and it's obvious that
right. It's
a huge part of your life, and you're terrific at it. Why is it important to caregivers?
Well, just humor is great for the immune system, and I always say that, you know, Norman Cousins said, laughter's the only wall between us and the dark. And the downside, you know, whenever anybody gets sick or when it hits the fan, everybody laughs when things are going well, but then they think if they laugh when everything falls apart, that somehow it trivializes a very stressful time. But if anything, you need it then more than ever, because, you know, people get very quiet and they start treating you in different ways, and they're afraid that, you know, and then there's the elephant in the middle of the room. Nobody ever acknowledges what's going on. So certainly...
And there are so many funny things that happen. I mean, if you think of...
Oh, yeah, the humor gets a little dark, but there's no question.
How do you give yourself the right to deal with it humorously? How do you, you know,
get to that point? It's just who I am, and I don't know. I don't know. It's just sometimes... A lot of it depends on the patient, too, I think, you know. Dennis was such a classy guy. You know, he knew what was going on, and he was willing to talk about it. But I think there should be more of a rule book. The caregiver is the most thankless role in the world, because
right. When
you're the patient, you know, everybody gives the patient some slack, as they should. But the caregiver, you've got the stress of life, and then you put a catastrophic illness on top of that, and the stress goes through the roof. I was diagnosed with breast cancer 3 days after he asked me to marry him. Yeah, so he got cancer 6 years later.
Right, so you were already a breast cancer survivor.
I was already a breast cancer survivor, and he, of course, was there for me. Now, I never got sick. I caught it early. I never got sick. It never came back. Now, that's a 10-minute movie of the week. But it's plenty exciting for the tens of thousands of women and some men who are going to get this disease. Now, Dennis made it very clear he would love me with or without a breast.
But so you had a partnership with
Dennis. Well, I had a partnership, and one of the things I say always in my speech, because the book evolved out of a speech, which started on a very low-key deal 15 years ago, where I started talking about my cancer treatment. But it is a partnership, and it's a family journey illness, no matter what the outcome. And everybody has to be allowed to process it and mourn and deal with it in absolutely their own way. I mean, I always say, like the other day, my friend, a friend of mine is going to the doctor a lot, and they're having a hard time diagnosing her, and her husband just had open heart surgery, and everybody's, and they're not kids, and it's, but it never occurred to her not to go into the doctor's office alone, you know.
Mm-hmm. Somebody
drives her to the doctor, and they sit in the waiting room. But if there's ever a time in your life that you need somebody there, as you're being, you know, assaulted by the language of your disease and all the feelings that go with it, that person, A, cares deeply about you and can maybe think of questions to ask that haven't occurred to you. So you definitely need an advocate.
Well, that's
an advocate who isn't worried about being a good sport or pissing somebody off. Because not that you have to act badly, but I think you really desperately need somebody in your corner who's an advocate and will be the squeaky wheel if necessary.
Well, we have this thing about doctors. You know, I always say, you know, you go into the doctor's office with 50 questions. You walk in there, you can't remember what they are. They give you 8 minutes.
Yeah, they do. And they start looking at their watch, and you feel like they're... And, you know, first you have to go in and say, and they're working for me, and my time's as valuable as theirs. But it's very hard because they're not seeing people at their best. They're seeing frightened people and confused people and overwhelmed people.
How did you deal with that? How did you get hold of that situation through your illness?
Well, Benny went with me. I tell the story about how the doctor said... Like Dennis was one who thought to say, when the doctor said you have breast cancer and I recommend a mastectomy, Dennison was the one who thought to say, well, is there a difference in the survival rate between a lumpectomy and a mastectomy? And then the doctor said, no, but if it were my wife. And then I was the one who said, well, what if it were your testicles? But, of course, that's another story. But I think the thing to remember is that's a perfectly reasonable. There's no such thing as an unreasonable question or a silly question or a frivolous question or waste of time question. It's your life, and if you don't, and you got to get these answers.
Well, the only stupid question is the unasked question.
Yeah, exactly. So it, I came into this with a very, you know, with kind of a person who's comfortable talking personal and who is kind of an in-your-face kind of gal. So I didn't have to learn to be somebody different, which many people, it's just not their style. And that's when it gets to be doubly hard, especially where doctors are concerned and where you need the, you know, the caregiver there. I think when people get sick, I talk about this a lot, people get sick and everybody feels they have to say something profound. But if there's ever a time when you don't need to say anything...
The value of silence.
The value of silence and the value of listening. That's it, because... and it's scary, you know, especially a younger person. They want to suddenly think of all the reasons they're not going to get sick and die. Or get sick. And there are, I always say there's a zillion infinitesimal life gifts, you know. During Denny's illness, somebody came up, showed up one day and said, I'm taking you out for a massage. Taking you both out. Now, you know, when you're going through all this, the last thing in the world as a patient, and especially a caregiver you think of, is to give yourself something
right.
That nurtures you. And helps you not get overwhelmed and burn out, you know, no matter what it is. Poetry or silence or walks or back rubs or swimming or whatever, you know. And it's the thing you need most, and you have to give yourself. And that's very hard, too. This is and then you feel like you have to be on your best behavior. I never did feel that.
You could teach that.
Well, I remember like 2 weeks, my husband had to tell me to let go, you know, because all the things he loved about me when he was well, you know, my tenacity and my persistence and all that, you know, really got on his nerves when he was sick. And finally he said, look, I'm dying and I can't play with my son or cook a meal for my friends. Or said, I'm dying, and please don't make me feel like a failure. So he said, you got to let go, and I said, okay.
But that was a communication between the two of you where, you know, your fight then wasn't against the illness but was with him.
No, and you know, he waited. He would have been gone. He had pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
But I remember 2 weeks, a few days before he told me this, I had drug him to a doctor. And I look back now, I have, except this, my book says, don't look back, we're not going that way. I have to remember that I was a very good wife and partner. And that, I, you know, he said once, everyone else wants me to be comfortable, you want me to live. And so I was just... he was at the doctor, and at one point, I said something, and the doctor said, you know, he pointed his finger at me and said, you should, and I grabbed his finger, and I said, I'm so fucking sick and tired of people telling me what I should or shouldn't do. When your wife is dying, you come talk to me.
Great.
So, as you can see, I didn't hold back. And then he said, you know, this doctor called me, and... said, you're right, you know, I have to, you're right.
Well, we're always telling caregivers, look, you're a professional, too. Your role is to be the advocate for your loved one. So treat the other professionals on your loved one's care team with the interaction and respect that they, you know, treat each other. So
yeah.
you talk to the doctor and you have information and advice, make sure that it's qualified. When you spend time with the doctor and you're asking information, for God's sake, write down what he says and don't
let him. Oh, no, absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's, it sounds like you have that naturally.
I learned in the trenches.
What did you do to care for yourself during that time?
Well, I had a tremendous network of friends. And I ask for help, which is the hardest thing in the world.
That's great. And when you ask them for specific things? Or
for specific things, yeah. Will you... Or if somebody said, what can I do? I said, you could bring some food by. Or if you could take Denny to his... I had people that I could call. The first few calls were murder.
Your natural instincts seem to be, right on target with what you would hope people would do. We call the concept of getting other members of the family, other friends to help, a reverse gift list. You ask
yeah.
them for the gifts you want. And the thing that caregivers need to realize is no one ever says no.
No, they don't. Or let's say they do. You know, that was my fear. Somebody's going to say no, and then I'm going to feel so terrible. But, I mean, if somebody says, nobody ever said no to me.
Right.
But had they, it would have been for a damn good reason. And, no, they don't. They want desperately to be told what you need.
And manageable things you would do for them, things anyone would do.
Oh, exactly. Not give me all your money or move in. But just things like, and people would say, well, I want to do more than bring a dinner by. And I thought, you don't know how much that helps me. That is so great.
And how many other people are doing little things for you?
Yeah, little things like that. They would take Mikey or walk the dog or... I like to say the woman who showed up and said, I'm taking you guys out for a massage.
I love her.
Help them live.
Well, what advice do you have for family caregivers? What would you say?
Be good to yourself. Just be good to yourself. Listen to your body, your heart, your... because I think we're very hard on ourselves. And we always feel like, we're not doing enough. Just remember that it is one of the... It's a terribly hard job. Remember to do the things that... And again, the things you never think of doing as a caregiver, the things you should be doing to nurture yourself.
Like?
Well, you know, whatever it is that nurtures you.
Right.
Like the woman with the massage. It seems probably seems terribly frivolous to leave a sick person and go have a manicure, but it's whatever it is that gives you a little respite and a little time. And,
well, thank you.
And that's another thing, you know, I mean, some people... I didn't take particularly good. I mean, I gained a ton of weight when I was going through all this. And when I went to my bereavement group after he died, I was just surrounded by teeny, tiny little widows and widowers who couldn't eat a thing. And here, so everybody's different, you know. If I had it to do over again, I would have tried to exercise.
Well, it's a good point.
That is, but hey, I didn't.
We don't care for ourselves. How would we be able to
care
for our loved ones?
I know.
But it sounds like you did a heck of a job.
Well, thanks, Gary.